The Guardian.
It's Football Weekly Extra, and I'm Rob Curling. Today, in a show that's as stuttering and incoherent as Vic Reeves presenting an award at the Brits, we'll be getting to grips with the midweek football issues that really matter. So if you're hoping to hear about the last 512 round of the UEFA Cup, you've probably come to the wrong place. It's a big cup bonanza as we look to how our own acts fared in Europe. Take that. Marco Materazzi walks again as Inter crumble at Anfield. Chelsea and Arsenal both draw to keep their Champions League hopes alive, while Manchester United emerge from the Lyon's den relatively unscathed. We'll dial up Sid in Madrid to get the lowdown from Spain. Real Madrid fiddled while Roma burned them. While Barcelona's win in Glasgow leaves Celtic needing to go to Camp Nou and win, a situation that could get messy for the unfortunate Scottish champions. With the Carling Cup down to the final two, we'll finally treat this great competition with the reverence it deserves by crowbarring in a quick preview, if there's time, after we've wallowed naked in your correspondence and wondered how much Kevin Keegan will love it if Newcastle beat Manchester United this weekend. Stay tuned for all this and more in this week's Football Weekly Extra.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
With me in the pod today, Barry Glendenning, Paolo Bandini and Sean Engel. A very good morning to you gents.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Well, it was a decent enough week for English clubs in Europe, with Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester United all getting draws, and Liverpool, contrary to Barry's prediction on Monday, beating 10-man Internazionale 2-0 at Anfield. Liverpool fans have been quick to laud Rafa Benitez after the win, but how instrumental was Marco Materazzi's dismissal after 32 minutes, gents, do you think?
Well, according to Sean's script, we're now going to discuss this and say it was a disgraceful decision and that Liverpool looked ineffective until they scored. So that's my opinion.
I'd like to, keeping a James Richardson theme going, I'd like to go off-piste here just a little bit and add my own ad-libbed comments here and say I thought it was a disgraceful decision. I thought both those yellows were a little on the hard side. Sean?
They were, although Materazzi has form and he's probably paying back time. Obviously, the sending off completely changed things. Until then, it was one of those typical games at Anfield where nothing much goes on. After that, Inter stood back looking for the 0-0. Liverpool didn't really get going until halfway through the second half. But even before they scored, I thought it was a nailed-on 0-0. But Liverpool proved me wrong.
And Paolo, a bit of a tiff afterwards between the Italian players, all accusing Materazzi for being responsible for the defeat. Is that what's coming out in the Italian press?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big one that everyone's focused on in the Italian press is Ibrahimovic, which is a little rich, given that Ibrahimovic really didn't show up himself at all on Tuesday night. After the game, what he said was the press asked him whether it was Materazzi's fault, and he said, well, what happened? Well, why don't you go and ask Materazzi what happened? And there was this sort of incident, and today he's sort of come out and he's gone, well, I've spoken to Marco. Marco says it was a bad decision, so, that's okay with me, but I think it's very much not at the moment.
Sorry, Barry, go on.
I was just going to say, I think the referee could probably, point to the letter of the law and say that it was a justified sending off, but players get away with an awful lot.
What law? What law?
Well, the fact that he did bring down Torres.
It wasn't a yellow card, though, surely.
I thought the second one was a more justifiable offence. I think the first one was definitely harsh. I thought also that, the thing is that, a lot of people come out and they're like, well, Materazzi should know better because who he is. And there was a big thing about this in one of the Italian columnists, Candido Canavo, who's the former editor of Gazzetta, came out. And he was like, Materazzi is completely prejudged in these situations. And it's true. And I think that's ultimately, it's not fair on Materazzi. But at the same time, on a yellow card, he should have known better than to get himself involved in something that was really unnecessary.
Isn't this one of the problems with the way our disciplinary system works? So you can get a yellow card for shoulder barging someone, and you can get a red for, and there's no sort of in-between thing. Really, a shoulder barge, I think, if you're the kind of players charging down the wing and you deliberately take them out, you could be a classic case for a sin bin for 15 minutes to try and have some sort of balance in there. But it's either a yellow card, which is next to nothing, and it goes to a red where suddenly you're down to 10 men. It changes everything.
I thought the referee seemed very pro-Liverpool throughout the game, actually.
Liverpool fans would disagree because they'd say he didn't give him a nailed-on penalty when he probably could have Vieira handled. And, but if he'd given them the penalty and sent Materazzi off, he might as well just wrap the nice result up in a big ribbon and hand it to them. They did get an easy ride, and that happens. Referees get intimidated in places like Anfield. And, you had ex-Liverpool players acting as pundits even saying he was a homer. So, you know, but these things happen in football and you have to take advantage of them, and Liverpool did. So.
They did indeed. Paolo, what did Massimo Moratti make of the defeat? Because he'd said to his team beforehand that they've got to make the final in Moscow at the very least.
Yeah, he was actually surprisingly okay about it. I think the one thing is that, as sometimes happens, you know, it's happened before with the national team and it's happened before with the club teams in Europe, Italian teams, because you get a refereeing decision like this, they suddenly all very happy just to hang it up as a big conspiracy and let the actual fact that they didn't play very well slide. I mean, I do think that despite the fact that I don't think Inter were playing very well in the first 30 minutes, I think, you know, neither were Liverpool. I think the injury to Cordoba sort of was what really exasperated the situation, because suddenly you were down to, you know, your fourth or fifth choice centre back at that point. And that's what really sort of made it into more of a situation. But yeah, I mean, Moratti actually came out and called the players heroic.
Did he?
So there you go.
Oh, interesting. What about Liverpool and the Champions League? Why do they do so well in this competition when they can't beat a Championship side in the FA Cup?
Well, it's different rules, isn't it? I mean, over a league, over 38 matches, you have to go out and beat teams. You have to attack. You have to open them up. You have to be able to break down teams that come and stick 10 men behind the ball. Champions League, you know, if you're very good at stopping other teams scoring, and Liverpool are, they're brilliant at it, particularly away from home. And you've got, you know...
Unless you're Barnsley.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't Liverpool's full strength side. Liverpool are very good at Anfield, winning 1-0, 2-0, and they're very good at, you know, sticking, you know, 11 men behind a ball and grinding out 0-0s away from home.
I think as well the Barnsley result, I may have said this on Monday, so apologies if I'm repeating myself, heaven forbid, but the Barnsley result was a bit of a fluke. With the greatest respect to Barnsley, Liverpool should have won that game comfortably. They just couldn't put away their many, many chances.
Well done, you've covered all bases and ended up not offending anyone there, Barry.
Yeah, I know,
well done.
Which is rare when I'm
disappointing.
A job on Sky Sports News away.
If I get to sit beside Georgie Thompson, I'll be happy enough with that.
Yeah, okay, that's what everybody says. Right.
Is it true she sits on two telephone books or a big cushion?
I think it could be true. I'm not sure if it's telephone books exactly, but she is quite diminutive in stature.
Yes. She sits on telephone books and you're sitting on the fence, so we will walk this line of questioning.
Small but perfectly formed. Let's just hit the blogs where Villa Support Group says, I hate to say it, absolutely hate it, but I think Liverpool will make it to the semi-finals of the Champions League. Rafa, like a one-armed lady of the night, seems to have one speciality, and that is the big cup. Well, that's what we've just been talking about, of course.
That's Richardson-esque. Simile manufacturing. I don't think Liverpool will get to the semi-finals, but only a fool would bet against them, because they just defy expectation year after year after year. They could win the bloody thing, or they could get knocked out in the second leg in the San Siro. You just don't know.
What do you think is going to happen in the San Siro, Paolo?
I think it'll probably be nil-nil. Rubbish. I said about the first leg, so, you know, I was obviously spot on that time. I can't see Inter coming back.
You can't?
No.
Sean?
Me neither.
No. Well, there you go, Liverpool. You're on your way. Well done, boys. Last night, Arsenal hosted Inter's city rivals Milan in a game that had fewer chances than an orphan brought up in the projects.
That was mine. Hands up.
I wonder what that means.
I'd like to state for the record again that, like a Monday, I wrote the introduction, which was quite good, and Sean did the rest. 50% of the people in this pod were in attendance at the Emirates last night, because myself and Paolo were there at opposite ends of the ground.
Mm.
And it was quite a good game. Ebbed and flowed and ebbed and flowed.
I thought the first half wasn't that exciting, but the second half was certainly enjoyable.
In the build-up, Arsene Wenger was saying to his side, don't be nervous, which is precisely what they were. Well, in front of goal they were, weren't they? They were.
Well, you say that, I mean, I actually thought that for all this, as always, whenever an Italian team keeps a clean sheet, the press call all excited about Italian defending and how classically brilliant it is. But I actually thought that Milan defended extremely nervously for a long period of the second half, especially right after Nesta had gone off, to be fair, which, you know, makes sense because he's the most composed defender probably. But nevertheless, I actually thought that, you know, there was a point in the second half where Milan were all over the place and playing like they were, looked like by far the more inexperienced team, despite their increasing their higher age.
Is it true that they played the theme to the Italian job just before kickoff?
I didn't hear it.
Unfortunately, I was stuck on a Piccadilly line train that managed to take an hour and 5 minutes to get from Gloucester Road to Arsenal, so I missed kickoff.
Right. Well, that's
a
shame.
I was wandering around under the stand in tears because I just discovered that they don't sell alcohol in grounds on the nights of Champions League games, which was a revelation that did please me not one bit, I have to say.
I was hoping that you'd say yes, they did, and then I could do a tiny little link, say, but Italian job not done.
Ah, right. Yeah, sorry. Well,
no, no, it would
have
been very slick. But that wasn't scripted. That's an ad-lib. Yes. That's some of my own work. Some of my best.
Scripted and contrived banter. It's the way forward.
That's how I make my living.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carry on.
All right. But I think if Arsenal had nicked it, and they should have nicked it at the end, Adebayor missed a great chance in injury time. It wouldn't have been unfair on Milan. If Milan had nicked it, you know, they could have nicked it as well. I think Arsenal had the better chances, were the better team, and did try to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. But it's sort of a sad inevitability about what's going to happen in the second leg. I think, you know, Milan will win it 1-0 in the 85th minute, and Arsenal will go out.
Oh dear! Anyone else agree with that one?
No. I don't know. I don't actually because I think if Arsenal can score an away goal, and I don't think that's so hard to believe given the way the game went last night. Yeah, it's still going to be the same teams even if it's in Milan, and you know Arsenal have gone to Milan and beaten Inter there. I know it's a very different proposition, but nevertheless,
they have a pretty good away record actually in this competition.
Yeah, I think if they can go away and get an early goal, which again I don't think is inconceivable, then we could have a very interesting game.
It's worth mentioning, I think, that James Richardson has been ranting and raving about how great Pato is for several weeks, months now.
Yeah.
And he was terrible last night. He phoned in a very lethargic performance and got substituted with about 20 minutes to go.
Well, so Richardson clearly knows nothing.
Yeah. It's only fair that we point out his many shortcomings as often as possible.
I wouldn't want to offend James. He was just back from an injury. And,
please let. Who James was?
Yes.
Yeah, on the piece.
Skiing. It's been very dangerous.
Yeah. Okay, Manchester United, they scraped a 1-1 draw in France. A late goal from Carlos Tevez just to saving them, cancelling out that fabulous strike by Lyon's Karim Benzema. United have asked UEFA, though, to investigate because Cristiano Ronaldo was dazzled by a laser beam just before, and I gather during the game. And Paolo, as our newly appointed technology expert, you can give us some details on this.
Yeah, well, I was actually just reading the script as I was on the way over here, and the first question which you were supposed to ask me is, how do these laser beams work?
Well, I don't always follow the scripts.
which I thought would be very... I would have looked forward to my own answer on that one.
Let's hear it.
I've done some very thorough research on Wikipedia. So I can tell you all sorts of interesting facts, like that laser pointers can be used as toys for pets, especially for cats in play.
Why? What do they do with them?
Well, I presume you just have it moving around on the wall and the cat, being an idiot,
Chases it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Barry.
Is this the thing, one of these, this is all news to me, I must say, is this one of these pens that George Costanza had on Seinfeld, or someone had it on George?
Do you know what? That is what I thought it was, until I saw, actually, because all the reports, including our own one at the moment, are saying that this is before kickoff something happened, because it was during warm-ups, and that's what Man United reported. However, Sky Sports have just been showing footage, you know, just on Sky Sports News, where it definitely very much appears that Cristiano Ronaldo is in the middle of the game and there's a great big green dot on him, and it's not like a little red laser dot, it's a great
so
big
huge green.
So he
could be forgiven for thinking it's a sniper rifle sight, and which is the kind of thing that would put you off your game, I imagine.
To be honest with you, if this was a sniper rifle, it would have to be a pretty blinking huge rifle, that's all I'm going to say. But apparently these green ones are quite dangerous. Apparently they can... I read three reviews of one on Amazon and people were saying, oh, messed my eyes up and everything.
What, permanently or just temporarily?
I don't know.
Well, this is important, Paolo. I thought you'd spent all morning doing your research. We ought to know how badly damaged Ronaldo's eyesight could be.
Well, it can't have been too badly damaged if this bloke was able to type a review on Amazon.
No, that's true, but shocking nonetheless.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what about the game itself, boys?
I was flicking between this and the Celtic-Barcelona game, which we were... come on to later. Mm. United, it was a typical United away performance. They were slightly ahead in the first half, a slightly better team without really looking like scoring. They went a goal behind, struggled a bit, but then probably deserved, you know, their equaliser on through a mistake really in the Lyon offence. Benzema was very good, but again, there has an inevitability about it. When you go to Old Trafford, you can see United maybe nicking it 2-1 by the odd goal, just because Lyon's defence. Boomsong, Jean-Alain Boomsong, much maligned when he played for Newcastle, actually didn't do too bad last night. Made a couple of sort of late interceptions, but he can't really have two good games on a trot, can he?
See, Benzema, the young fella that Paul Doyle has been championing, he stood up to be counted, unlike Jimbo's protege.
So, plain sailing for United now. Would you think the odds are, let's
you'd
see,
probably
9-2?
Think so. I mean, their record in France away or in Europe when playing in France is not good, so they'll probably be happy enough with a draw and away goal and finish them off at Old Trafford.
Okay, Barcelona 7-2 favourites, by the way. Chelsea, third favourites at 13-2, ahead of Liverpool on 9s, AC Milan on 10s, Real also on 10s.
I would think, I think Chelsea are quite quite a good bet at those odds, but there you have it. I think they're difficult to beat at the moment. I know they weren't exactly brilliant against Olympiacos, but that wasn't their first choice team, and they're going to have a an easy route through to the quarterfinals now, so why not?
Yeah. Celtic at 400-1.
And I'd say you could stick another 3 zeros on that, and I still wouldn't have a piece of it. They were lucky to only lose 3-2 last night. My boy, McGeady, he delivered. So,
well, we'll talk about Celtic in part two, Barry. Okay. Let's take a little breather for now. Back to come, and we'll also be talking to Sid, who's in Spain.
Guardian Daily. News from The Guardian.
The Guardian's news podcast has changed. Guardian Daily is now available to download from first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday. You can listen to it on your way to work or make it the first thing you click on when you log on to your computer. Guardian Daily, the best news and analysis from The Guardian's top team of reporters and commentators.
Guardian Daily from guardian.co.uk.
Football Weekly Extra.
Welcome back to part two of the pod. We'll be speaking to Sid Lowe in Spain in a little bit, but first, there's been plenty of action on the Football Weekly blog this week.
There certainly has, Rob, including lots of comments about your own performance on Monday. Connor from Valhalla, that's a town in the US, not the home in Norse mythology for those gloriously slain in battle, goes as far to call you brilliant and says it's a testament to your professionalism that the pod didn't miss a beat. And I think professionalism in the pod is probably a new one to us all.
Thanks, Connor.
Meanwhile, Tomatron Netherlands says, without getting drawn into the argument over whether you're better than James Richardson or not, I'd like to say that I found today's pod, that's Monday's pod, infinitely more entertaining than the tedious bi-weekly Philips Netcast news videos that you occasionally present on the Philips corporate internet site. Can you tell us a bit about that, Rob? What does it involve?
Well, it involves...
Money?
Money. It's a tough life out there in the real world, Sean. You got to take the jobs when they come. That's why I'm here this morning. It's a very interesting, I don't know what Tomatron's problem is, very, very interesting internal news bulletin for the staff of Philips globally.
It sounds fascinating.
But it really is.
So what do you talk about? Latest washing machine developments?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, really? Latest washing machine components, screwdrivers, Philips screwdrivers. Every household has one. Yeah, you can imagine how important this is. No, it's very, very important and very lucrative.
So James Richardson gets the big Champions League final gigs in Athens.
Have you ever done a McDonald's ad? He's done a McDonald's ad.
No, I don't do commercials.
Is that because you weren't asked or because you, a matter of principle?
It's both. Also because of one's appearance on a news channel, it's very difficult to do commercials. Talking about appearances on television, I got a call after Monday's podcast from James's producer on Satanta Sports, who was miffed that we'd said that James hasn't appeared on primetime television since 1999. I have to say, I still think that is a fact that exists and is absolutely right to this day. But of course, James does present Football Weekly on a Friday. No, it's called Friday Football. Football Friday on Santa Claus.
No one watches it.
I meant TV channels that people actually watch.
Yes. This producer of James is actually is a dear friend of mine. You might know him, Paolo. He's an Italian immigrant, much like yourself, Stefano Bozzi.
We do all know each other.
Yeah, yeah. We should do.
They all live together in a big house. And to be fair, Richardson used to also present that terrible quiz show with Carl Vorderman, didn't he? That lasted about 5 episodes before getting mercifully put to bed, put to sleep.
Yeah.
I should also mention, Rob, that Wheatin 2 says, I forgot what Rob Curling looks like. So I did the logical thing and Googled him. Yeah. And the top entry is cityspeakersinternational.co.uk, where it reveals that if we want you to give a motivational speech or something, you cost between $2,000 and $4,000. And Wheatin 2 wants to know if everyone in the pod gets such a good rate. And I certainly don't. I work for food.
I go up for peanuts, literally.
Yeah. Very good, yes. Sean
and he didn't share them either, those peanuts. So,
I'm surprised they've gone so modestly, 2,000 to 4,000. I mean, honestly, what do they think I am? That's not a pod rate, obviously. This is done purely for the glory of being a Guardian employee for a day.
And finally, there's a great story from Hardcore Prawn, who writes, it was great to hear the Dave Besson salad cream story again, despite the reference to the wrong sort of sauce. It also reminds me of an incident from my days working in the R Price in Uxbridge. A Chelsea supporting colleague of mine was on the shop floor on all fours, reaching for some litter underneath the top 40 display, when a customer lurched over and dropped 10 CD cases on his head, then knocked over a few shelves in a futile attempt to catch them in the process, he says. Standing up to berate the clumsy oaf for not only damaging our products, but also for injuring him in the process, my colleague found himself face to face, well, face to stomach, with Dave Besant, then of Chelsea, and worryingly for the rest of us, of England too. His mood switched from anger to resigned disappointment as he realised that the man at the heart of his beloved Blues defence was incapable of keeping his giant mitts wrapped around a few CDs. Still, it gave the rest of us weeks of fun, chucking CDs around the shop to a soundtrack of our own Besson-themed commentary.
Love it, love it. You know, I'm so glad we mentioned Besson, because it looks like Chris Coleman, we also talked about in the same breath practically on Monday, is looking to appoint Besson as his goalkeeping coach at Coventry.
And I presume Coventry fans will be delighted to hear that, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure they will. And let's just hope that Besson doesn't try and get his hands on a jar of Coleman's mustard. Otherwise, we know what will happen, don't we?
God.
None of this is scripted. Back to the Champions League. Games featuring English teams might have had fewer goals than a Generation X, yeah man, whatever, dropout. But matches featuring Spanish sides were far more exciting. There were 3 goals in the Roma-Real Madrid game, 5 in the Fenerbahce-Sevilla game, another 5 in Barcelona's dramatic come-from-behind not once but twice win over Celtic. So what about the Spanish press and what they made of that game? Let's hear now from our correspondent in Madrid, Sid Lowe. Sid.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, and you are too, I trust.
I am well, thank you.
Excellent. So Real Madrid and Sevilla lost. It wasn't a good week for Spanish teams in Europe.
Well, on the face of it wasn't, but the feeling in Spain is that actually it's not that bad. I think both Real Madrid and Sevilla feel like they allowed their opponents to get away with it. Sevilla and he feel that they should have beaten Fenerbahce, although they were defeated 3-2. And Real Madrid certainly thought they should have beaten Roma. I actually thought they played reasonably well. Ruud van Nistelrooy hit the post. Aaron Robben was excellent. The midfield of Madrid kept the ball reasonably well. And so in both senses, there's this disappointment not having won the games, but there's also a feeling that this can be turned around. Because let's not forget, in both cases, a 1-0 home win will be enough to put them through Sevilla, who have 2 away goals, and Real Madrid, who have the 1 against Roma. And there's a real feeling that they shouldn't panic, that this isn't the end of the world, and that while it could have been better, it could also have been a hell of a lot worse.
Barcelona came through. You thought that they might struggle, and in fact they did a bit, didn't they, Sid?
They did to some extent. I actually thought they played better than I expected them to. I didn't expect them to win. I must confess, I thought they would draw and that they would be very happy with a score draw. As it is, obviously a 3-2 victory is a fantastic result for them. They almost certainly will go through now, Barcelona, because at home in the Camp Nou this season, in the league, they've won, I think it's 12 out of 13. The only defeat was that 1-0 defeat to Real Madrid, and a 1-0 defeat would also put them through. So every single home result they've had this year would be enough to get them through against Celtic. The quality of the goals from Barcelona was just brilliant, I thought, and I must admit, they surprised me.
Yeah, and Celtic winning away from Scotland doesn't look terribly likely, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't, and as I say, particularly at the Camp Nou, and I always felt that this was a tie that would depend on the second match, and that Barcelona's aim would be to go into the second game level but with an away goal. Well, it's even better than that.
And on the domestic front in Spain, Sid, what about this weekend? Because Barcelona and Real Madrid, they're both at home to sides lower down the table. Do you think the gap at the top is going to stay the same with both of them coming through comfortably?
On the face of it, it should, because, of course, we're talking about sides who, as I just mentioned, Barcelona have only been beaten once at home all season, and that was against Real Madrid. Real Madrid have won every single home game, so you'd expect them both to win. Barcelona playing Levante, who are on their way down, although who are showing a really quite impressive attitude, considering most of their players haven't been paid for over a year, considering that the club is a complete joke, and considering they know they're going down. They've shown them quite a lot of pride to actually win the odd game here and there. I think Barcelona should win that comfortably. Madrid are at home against Getafe. Now, theoretically, Madrid should win this comfortably, but Getafe are a side who traditionally have made it difficult for Madrid. They haven't tended to win at the Bernabeu, but they have tended to win at the Colosseum, which obviously is a bit of a laugh calling Getafe's ground the Colosseum, but that's what they call it. And they've tended to cause Madrid problems. And also, there's a slightly worrying statistic for Real Madrid, which is that, all right, so we're talking about them having a big lead at the top of the table, 5 points clear. All right, so I'm saying that I think they should go through in the Champions League because a 1-0 home win against Roma would be good enough. But that doesn't change the fact that since the turn of the year, in 2008, Real Madrid have lost 5 times. Twice in the league, once in the Champions League, twice in the Copa del Rey. And there is an ever so slight hint of nervousness about Real Madrid. That said, I do think this will be a weekend that probably doesn't change things at the top of the table.
OK, Sid, thanks very much for that. Enjoy a sunny weekend in sunny Spain. That's it, right. From part 2 in the pod. Come up in part 3, we'll be looking ahead to the Carling Cup final, some Premier League action, talking about the global Premier League plans, and a few more of your blogs.
I'm Alok Jha, and on the latest Science Weekly podcast, we're here in Boston for the AAAS Science Conference discussing the future and safety of our food. Are you ready to start eating cloned meat and GM cornflakes? Also in the show, how close are we to discovering life on Mars? NASA's Stephen Squires from the Mars Rover missions details the next stage of exploring the red planet. Plus, inventor and futurist Raymond Kurzweil tells us why technology is going to save the world. It's all on the New Science Weekly at guardian.co.uk/audio.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast.
Welcome back to the pod and part three. Now, this Sunday sees the Carling Cup final, and I see that Frank Lampard's urged Abraham Grant to find a settled starting 11 at Chelsea. Apparently, he's frustrated at being left out for the Champions League title Olympiacos on Tuesday night when he felt fresh. But he's been having a bit of a whinge.
Well, yeah, I think, he says that I don't know how much rotation there'll be in the future, but it's important we get a settled team in the running. That's what he's saying. I think a settled team, and that's code for a team that includes him, I think.
Yeah.
And I think John Terry's the same. He's let it be known through the pages of London's Evening Standard that he'd be very unhappy if he hasn't picked for the Carling Cup final. On the one hand, you can see why. You know, it's a big game. But on the other hand, you know, he's only played once against Huddersfield and he's not fully fit. One of the reasons why he fell out with Mourinho, of course, is Jose Mourinho had lots of these tests. He analyses lots of data, pro-zone data, and he saw that Terry wasn't as athletic as he was this season. So it'd be interesting to see. He's had lots of problems with his knees and other injuries. You couldn't blame Avram Grant if he decided not to risk John Terry for the final, but you know, it will create huge ructions between, you know, if that happens.
Doesn't it say a lot about the leadership of Grant and compared to that of Mourinho that he's come out and done it in the paper? Because I can't really imagine John Terry coming out, even when he was unhappy, and saying, "I demand to be picked under Mourinho" in the evening paper.
Well, I think under Mourinho he wouldn't have needed to do that because he would have been one of the first names down the team sheet. Yeah, I mean, it's no great surprise Terry whinging, you know, Chelsea's fourth official whinging again, Frank Lampard whinging again, and hopefully the pair of them will be benched for the final. And that's my.
In their defence, Grant has picked in the FA Cup and the Champions League 22 different players in those two games. So has he actually got a point in the interest of the side rather than interest
possibly,
of himself?
But again, you know, you would have expected them to beat Huddersfield, and you know, you're not going to pick your very best team there, and you save them for the more important game against Olympiacos.
Isn't that what Rafael Benitez tried to do against Barnsley? Blew up in his face.
And what about Tottenham? Because probably this is going to be one of their, well, perhaps their only chance of European qualification next season by being Carling Cup winners. Is that a realistic chance, do you think, Spurs, on Sunday?
Oh, of course they've got a chance. I mean, it's interesting though that Wande Ramos, which I think is quite brave, and I agree with him, he says that, you know, Sunday will be a very beautiful and passionate game, and it's been a long time since we're in a final, but a European final will always be more important than a final in a domestic cup competition. So he's concentrating more on tonight's UEFA Cup game than he is on Sunday.
Ramos doesn't really lose cup finals, does he? He's won about 25 billion of them in the last couple of years. Hopefully it'll be a good game because, you know, it's Carling Cup. No, it doesn't really matter who wins, to be honest, but if it's a good game, then it'll at least give us a bit of entertainment over the weekend.
I wonder if actually it does matter. Do you think for the neutrals it actually would be very refreshing if Tottenham won a cup rather than one of the big four yet again? I think there's something quite refreshing about this lineup.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think though that the Carling Cup or the League Cup and the UEFA Cup, they ceased to be important, I don't know, around, I guess, the early mid-90s. I remember growing up as a lad and, okay, winning the European Cup and winning, you know,
cue the Horvus music.
Yes. But winning the first division as it was then, they were the two most important things, but not that far behind were winning the League Cup, winning the FA Cup, you know, winning one of the Cup Winners' Cup, UEFA Cup. These days, it really is so much about the Premier League, thanks to, you know, to Sky and the way
not
people
at all.
Have been,
pleasure.
People have been conditioned really to think that. I think it's a great shame.
But I mean, Tottenham haven't. I think the last trophy they won was the League Cup back in 1999.
No, yeah,
it's a big gap for a club that should be.
Well, Paolo, you're an Arsenal season ticket holder, junior gunner man, and junior gunner. Would you prefer to see arch enemy Spurs get beaten on Sunday, or would you be happy enough to see just someone new win a competition?
I think probably. As an Arsenal fan, I would probably like to see Chelsea win it, and as a general neutral, I probably would like to see Tottenham win it.
So move over on that fence, Rob.
Yeah.
Paolo wants to sit down beside you.
The thing is that as an Arsenal fan, I don't exactly love Chelsea either, so it's not exactly a win-win.
You're not a genuine
neutral,
are you? You'd
like to see the Bulls lose. Yeah.
Well, fair enough. Maybe they will. Busy week of domestic league action. The pick of the games has to be Newcastle against Manchester United on Saturday. Wouldn't Kevin Keegan just love it? Absolutely love it if he could get his first win on Saturday night. It's the 5:15 kickoff. Any chance of that happening,
no,
Barry?
None.
Why ever not?
Newcastle are
It's got to happen at
terrible.
Some stage.
They are shockingly bad.
I wonder what you're going to say then.
I can't. Oh, sorry. Well, I could say that too. They're at home, so maybe they have a chance. But if Manchester United have an off day, but I think Manchester United will probably be able to dispatch them without coming out of second gear. Newcastle have terrible, terrible problems. And
defence is non-existent. Well, is it the defence or is it the midfield? Is it what,
their defence
players in front of the back?
Well, you've got everywhere. I mean, you've got Alan Smith, who tends to start. I think has he scored one goal in the last 2 years in about 50-odd games. You've got Nicky Butt, who, you know, a couple of years ago wasn't considered good enough for Birmingham side. He's your sort of midfield ball winner. The defence looks ropey. You know, Keegan's motivational speech, which I said in the previous pods, may have worked in the early 90s, where people would remember him playing and remembered him as an inspirational leader. People now in their 20s playing for Newcastle only remember him as the I would love it and resigning on the toilet when they when England lost
when Elvis Germany.
But they might well stay up because they've got there's lots of poor teams below them, but they are in deep trouble.
I mean, they went to play Aston Villa with hilarious consequences. And if that's what Aston Villa, like John Carew, and is able to do to them, what the hell? Manchester United will slaughter them. But, you know, they have a chance because they're at home and their passionate support, their long-suffering, passionate, cold, topless, tattooed support will get behind them. But I just don't think that they have enough in their locker to beat Man U. It could be a high score in humdinger and a very entertaining game, but not necessarily if you're a Newcastle United fan, I think.
Poor old Newcastle, looking bleak, isn't it?
But I mean, me saying that they have emphatically no chance can only help because my predictions in here lately have been shocking as well, as bad as Stephen Carr's attempts at defending. So, you know, I've given them hope.
You have indeed, bro. Any other fixtures that anyone would like to point out as interesting?
Liverpool are at home to Middlesbrough. You know, that doesn't look too inspiring. Sunderland travel to Portsmouth. You'd expect them probably to lose, but you never know. Wigan Derby, that's a relegation 25-pointer. So
I mean, I think Birmingham Arsenal is a really interesting one.
I do.
Arsenal, okay, they weren't great last night. They're okay. They were obviously poor against United. They haven't been looking that great. Birmingham are one of these teams, they're almost a bit like Liverpool in the sense that they don't score a lot of goals but are very tough to break down. Now, Chelsea only beat them 1-0 a few weeks ago at St Andrews. So Birmingham have been away at Liverpool, got a draw. They're tough, and Arsenal could well find that difficult.
Well, there you go. What about Chris Coleman's old club, Fulham, at home to West Ham? Are they? How much trouble are Fulham in at the moment?
I think apart they're in a lot of trouble. The new manager, Hodgson, whose name temporarily escaped me. We all know that he speaks 25 languages and he's coached teams across the world, but he doesn't seem to have whipped them into shape yet. West Ham are quite a good side. And I think if Fulham get beaten on Saturday, which there's a very good chance they will, they're right down in the mire and will struggle to get out.
I don't think it's on Saturday, which is why it's not here, but I have a feeling it's City Everton is on either Sunday or Monday.
Monday.
And that, I think, is a very interesting game because I think if Everton can win there, that's a real statement of intent of actually we have got a serious shout at getting in this fourth place.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, thank you very much indeed. Now, since the last show, the 39th game in the Premier League has looked even deader in the water than a young girl swimming on the opening credits of Jaws. There's a Football Association board meeting today.
Sorry.
Come on, Barry. Come on.
God, that's terrible. She looked quite alive in the water at the opening credits to Jaws, by the way, because she was swimming and then she got bitten, so she was struggling.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the last
so
we saw of her.
So potentially she was dead in the water.
Well, no, she was.
She died in the water.
Yeah. So you see, she was about. You see, the 39th game isn't yet dead, which is why it's very like her, because she wasn't actually dead at that stage.
I stand corrected. I apologise.
No, I think you've made a good point, but it's invalid.
Right. Okay.
But there is a very important Football Association board meeting later today to discuss it in greater depth. Former FA chief executive Mark Palios has described the Premier League's proposed international round of matches as a step too far, along with about a million other people.
Well, yeah, but a step too far. He knows all about that, of course, having gone a bit too far with Faria Alam when she was FA secretary.
It's a low blow.
Well, no, but I think it'd be really interesting to see what, you know, the Premier League say today. But you would expect, just judging from the number of clubs that. Privately, I was told 2 weeks ago that every club in the Premier League was behind Game 39. Mm. And since then, since they've known which way the wind's blown, pretty much all of them come out and said it's a terrible idea. Only I think Arsene Wenger says, you know, likes it, but pretty much every other club has rubbished it. So you'd expect the FA to, you know, because they've got, you know, England's bid for the 2018 World Cup in mind, will probably say formalise that in today's meeting.
Yeah. Do you think they'll give them a bit more time to come up with a workable plan, or do you think it will just fade away and in a few years' time it will become something else completely different?
I honestly don't know. I had a chat with a guy from the Premier League last week and he said that they were still keen to push this forward. There's a blog I think we'll come to actually by a guy called Tonup Thomas. Mm. Who basically points out that, you know, every January, you know, Mexican clubs go to the United States. They play a competition, two leagues of four, and it's not a friendly competition. The two winners get to go to the Copa Libertadores, which is, you know, the South American equivalent to the Champions League. And he quite reasonably points out, well, this is a real competition. It matters. And yet FIFA haven't said anything about it. So why is it so different to the Premier League? And the Premier League, you know, they've kept open the right to possibly sue people if they're not allowed to do this. So I think this will run and run.
I think what people find very difficult to understand is you lose the symmetry of the season by having an extra round of games. So how can that ever be fair?
Well, it isn't. But it's not about fairness, the Premier League. It's about money. Well, it isn't. Otherwise, we'd have, you know, you'd have different teams winning the league and different teams getting the top four. You know, it's about money.
I'm just getting less and less interested in this whole 39th game. I don't care at this stage. They could take it to the moon. I really.
But what about Scudamore? The thinking that perhaps Scudamore in making this move is trying to save the Premier League so that you don't get the breakaway of the big four or five clubs and a European Super League then being set up.
That's been mooted for a long, long time. You sort of, I know privately, important UEFA officials don't think that's. They were worried about it a few years ago. They're not so worried about it now.
Paolo, what are your thoughts?
I was just going to say exactly the same thing Sean did. Yeah. I think the whole the move to disband G14 has actually been, you know, indicative of a move away from that. I think we're not at any imminent risk of a European Super League.
On to a far more important matter. Drink-soaked Popinjay blogged in to ask me what the Georgie Thompson situation is. Now, I know Barry's very keen on this. By situation, Drink-soaked Popinjay, I have no idea what you mean. Do you mean her employment situation? What her job title is? Well, she's a Sky Sports News presenter. She's about 5 foot short. She's got long blonde hair. That's the situation, as far as I'm aware. Sean, anything else you think I should be adding to this question?
Apparently, she's a big greyhound.
No,
fan.
She's a big nothing.
Okay, she's a little greyhound fan. I think I, in the course of my stalking,
she does have
her.
The backlog of back dog of a greyhound. You're absolutely right.
The back.
Well, she has a share.
Oh, right. I definitely read somewhere in the course of my probably slightly creepy research on Ms. Thompson that she was into greyhound racing. So I've been loitering around Walthamstow and London and Bellevue ever since. So I haven't caught sight of her yet. But Walthamstow on a Saturday night, it's a good night out, I have to say.
Well, maybe I'll see if I can get a little invitation from Georgie for you, Barry, and then maybe you could escort her to Walthamstow.
Yeah, my girlfriend might have something to say about it. But
do you have one?
I do, yeah. Oh, well, you sound very surprised.
Well, not very surprised, but, you know, it's newsworthy.
Yeah. Thanks. I hope she's not listening to this.
Oh, I hope she is. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. It's been thoroughly enjoyable. Thank you for allowing me to stand in for little Jim Richardson.
It's been our pleasure, Rob.
No, it's been more mine. And as for the fee, well, I can't say thank you enough.
No doubt you'll be donating it to a charity.
Of course I will.
Yes,
always
you don't
donate
want to
talk charity.
About it.
No, I don't want to talk about my work for charity. That is it then for this week's Football Weekly Extra. If you have any comments about the show, you can go to guardian.co.uk/football. Click on the picture of James Richardson to have your say on the blogs. James, you'll be delighted to hear we'll be back from his luxury ski resort on Monday. But thank you very much indeed for tuning in and for your delightful comments this week. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.